Zelensky would ring me up regularly and ask me, what bandwagon can I jump on this week? He wanted to be popular with the newspaper readers and potential voters by taking up causes that were in the news and topical. But imagine if Daniel Chudzinski MP went round the homes and streets of Shrewsbury campaigning to be elected and said, if you want to vote for me, you're going to lose your home and families. If you vote for me, you're asking for higher taxes and lower wages. If you're going to vote for me, you're going to lose all that you have and all whom you love best. If you vote for me, it might end with you having a nasty death. What if he then turned to the crowd and said, so come on, who's on my side? Hands up those who are going to vote for me. Their polite reply might have been in the words of the former Wimbledon tennis champion John McEnroe, you cannot be serious. That's possibly what some of the crowd listening to Jesus were thinking, and even some of the congregation here this morning might be thinking it when they heard what Jesus was saying in this passage from Luke chapter 14. I've called this morning's sermon, which is the start of a new series on Luke's Gospel, The Cost of Being a Disciple and the Three Cannots. First cannot, whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry, secondly, cannot. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Third cannot. If you do not give up your possessions, you cannot be my disciple. Doesn't get much harder than that, does it? Seems a strange way to build up a religious movement. Most would surely be attracted by the benefits rather than being confronted by the cost. Why would anyone vote for Jesus? But let's change the script slightly and replace the MP with a great explorer. The leader of a great expedition foraging away through a high and dangerous mountain pass to bring urgent medical need and aid to a village cut off from the rest of the world. The leader stops and turns to his fellow explorers. If you want to come any further, you'll have to leave your rucksacks behind. From here on, the path is too steep to carry all that stuff. Also, you'd better send your last postcards home to your family and friends. This is a very dangerous route, and it's very likely that several of you won't make it back. We can understand that. We may not like the sound of it, but we can see why it makes sense. In this morning's reading, Jesus is more like the explorer than the MP in Shrewsbury. So let's look at these three cannots each in turn. Firstly, whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Of course, we need to put this verse into context, in the original context in first century Palestine. Otherwise, we might misunderstand Jesus' intent here. Jesus was speaking in Aramaic, and the use of the word hate is a hyperbole. He was not actually asking us to hate our family and relatives and hate our life. In Jewish culture, the rabbis would use the word hate to indicate a lesser love. So Jesus is saying, we need to put him first. He is our priority. He comes before all our relationships. Jesus is not saying we must hate our mother and father, our wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself. We must love them, but we need to love God even more and put him first in our life. Secondly, the sacrificial nature of this call to discipleship is re-emphasized in verse 27, when Jesus says, "Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple." This saying would have been enough to make the large crowd gasp in horror. Most of them would have seen criminals carrying their crosses on the way to execution, in humiliation and in shame. Why would anyone choose that for themselves? There was no turning back on that journey. Jesus is saying he comes before our personal desires. He comes before our dreams and our ambitions. He cannot come before our own plans for the future. Thomas A. Kempis, the Christian writer who wrote The Imitation of Christ in the 15th century, said this: "Many come following Jesus who love this heavenly kingdom, but few come looking forward to suffering. Many admire Jesus' miracles, but few follow him in humiliation to the cross." How true that is for us too. We admire Jesus, we admire his teaching, we glory in his love for us, but we're far more reticent to accept the humiliation of the cross for ourselves. But that is what is demanded of us, and we need to count the cost before becoming a disciple of Jesus. And it's a life-changing decision. Jesus wants to make sure that all who follow him have considered the cost. And he gives two examples. Would any of you think of building a tower without first sitting down and calculating the cost to see whether you could afford to finish the project? If the builder was unable to complete it, everyone would laugh at the unfinished tower. Then would any king march into battle with another king without first sitting down to consider whether with 10,000 men he can face an enemy coming to meet him with 20,000 men? If he cannot, then, long before the enemy approaches, he sends envoys and seeks terms for peace. Verse 33, Jesus comes to his third cannot. You cannot be my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions. The Greek word used here literally means to renounce our possessions. It doesn't mean we should put all our possessions on the front lawn outside our house saying, "Free for anyone to take away." It means more to renounce their power over us and to live in such a way that our possessions no longer have any control over us. It's the same as when we renounce at our baptism service the devil and all the forces that defy God. Then we were saying that the devil no longer has any power over us. That exactly is the same as when we renounce our possessions. We're saying they no longer have any power on us. We need them, but they don't dominate our lives. We want something at the end of this reading to soften the blow, but I'm afraid there's nothing. The Christian life demands strength to love. The Christian life demands that we carry a cross. The Christian life demands that we give up everything for God. Again, surely that's just too much to ask. Has there ever been anybody who's done this to perfection? Of course there is, Jesus. And so he becomes our model. As Thomas A. Kempis said, growth in discipleship is ultimately growth in the imitation of Christ, becoming more like Christ in our thoughts and actions. Notice in verse 25 we were told large crowds were travelling with Jesus. They've made the choice to travel with him. But have they made the choice to follow Jesus? There's a big difference. When we travel with somebody, we're still in control. We can still decide whether to take the next step, whether to go to the next destination, or to leave. There's not a lot of commitment there. But those who are already following Jesus have needed to be taught the nature of true discipleship. They were not antagonistic to Jesus' ministry. They were people who were interested enough in following him already. But even then, it seems they fully hadn't grasped the implication of being a disciple. The same is true for many of us today. Some churches are packed with people interested in travelling with Jesus, but haven't really grasped the implications of discipleship and following him. In this morning's reading, there were people willing to follow Jesus and learn from him, as long as the cost wasn't too high. They were casual followers. But Jesus points out this is a total misunderstanding of what it means to be a Christian. Some think there are two types of followers for Christ. On the one hand, the ordinary average person who's a casual traveller, a casual follower. And on the other hand, the passionate professional Christian who takes it all very seriously. No, there are not two types of Christians. There is one type of follower of Christ, as Jesus made clear in verse 26. Whoever comes to me. Jesus didn't come to earth to have people travel with him. He came to die for us and to invite us to follow him and become disciples. And if we're going to follow him, it won't be easy. We won't be in control anymore. Jesus will. Jesus is inviting the crowds to make a choice. Travel with him or follow him. If we travel him, we may get bored or frustrated or disappointed. If we follow him, it may mean all the way to the cross and the tomb. Being a Christian, Jesus reminds us today, is not a hobby. It isn't something we can do just when we want to or feel like it. We're either all in or not at all. And so for the crowds travelling with Jesus, it's time to decide. Do they want to travel with him or do they want to follow him? And that is the same question for you and me and everybody today. Are we here in church today because we want to travel with Jesus? Or are we here because we've made the choice to follow him? Or to take up our cross and follow him, having dedicated our lives to serving him? But if we follow Jesus, that means two very important things. Firstly, Jesus will lead the way. And secondly, that he will always be with us. When you think about it, Jesus is really only asking us to do what he has already done. He put serving God and saving us before caring for our earthly family. He gave up his possessions for us before caring for his earthly family. He took up his cross and, of course, he gave his life for us. Jesus did all that to be our Saviour, to save us from our selfish, sinful lives and to help us to dedicate our lives to serving God. Jesus' very last promise to us before he returned to heaven, he said he would be always with us to the end of the ages. And when we follow him, he is with us, helping us to carry our cross and to live our lives for him, forgiving us when we fall short, and inviting us over and over again to follow him. A few years ago, there was a cartoon in a Christian magazine showing a church building with its notice board outside. And the heading on the notice board said, "We are now the Church Light," L-I-T-E. Underneath, it continued what it meant being the Church Light. Only 7.5% tithe. Only 6-minute sermons. Only 40-minute worship services. Only 8 commandments. Or as we prefer to say, only 8 suggestions. You reject the 2 suggestions you don't like. Forget about them. Only a small commitment needed. It concluded everything you've ever wanted in a church and less. Are we ready to count the cost of being a disciple? Am I and you? Are we members of Church Light or the Church Real? Are we just travelling with Jesus or are we really following him? Amen.